I was thinking I was going to give a talk, but then I decided that instead of just pitching a talk out there, I thought maybe we'll answer some of the questions first, which cleared up some of the doubts people might have, and then give my talk around the different questions that came out from today. Okay? Let's start with the first question. Hopefully they're mostly meditation questions. Okay, first one is it important for the tongue to rest on the upper palate in meditation, or are there instances where it is best to let go and allow the tongue and jaw to soften? Also, does it matter how you place your hands? Thank you. I think regarding the tongue, it really doesn't matter where exactly it is. I just kind of allow the tongue to relax and just rest where it happens to rest. Sometimes it's kind of touching the top of the palate, and sometimes it's just kind of in the mouth somewhere. Yeah, in the beginning, these little kind of physical things seems important, you know, where to place the hands or where my tongue should be or how straight your back is. But as you meditate more and the body becomes more relaxed, it just kind of fades into the background and you become much more aware of your meditation object. But with anything, experiment, you know, place in different positions and see what works for yourself in different situations. Yeah? Does that make sense? Any questions or comments? Okay. Can you talk a little on walking meditation technique, please? Yeah. Sure. I might give a. I was going to do a one guided meditation. So why don't I do that? Save this for tomorrow. I'll do a guided meditation, walking meditation for tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Is that okay? Can you wait tomorrow morning? Okay, I'll do that. Put this aside. Venerable Kamawaro, could you tell us something about the monastery you're now at and the changes that you have taken place since you have been there? How does life there differ from Bodhinyana? Thank you. Okay. Yeah, I'll say briefly regarding the place I was at. The name is Wat Buddhadhamma. It was started 30 years ago by a monk named Kantipalo, and the land was offered by Ayakema, a famous teacher. And unfortunately, Kantipalo, Ajahn Kantipalo, disrobed about 16, 17 years ago. And after he disrobed, obviously there's some turmoil, and the monastery kind of turned itself into a meditation center. But for different reasons, because one, it was very isolated, and it still is. It's about 2.5 hours from Sydney. It's on a dirt road, and it takes them. It's not easy to get to, and there's no power, no electricity, and no running water. So it's mostly on solar, and you know, things are pretty basic. So over the years, people like. Meditators have moved on. They want more luxury, more comfort, like Jhana Grove. Everybody wants en suite, heated, you know, heated salas, all sorts of good stuff. And while the Wat is still very basic, it's got, you know, the sala is quite very cool in the morning, very, very warm in the afternoon. And yeah, you just bring lots of blankets and you take everything off when it's hot. Not everything, obviously. So, what was he saying? Yeah, but the thing that it has going for it is that it's an amazingly beautiful place. It's in the middle of a national park. So very, very quiet and very beautiful forest, lots of white gums and golf runs, and the drive up there is very beautiful. So over the years, many people come and stay, but because of the basic, it's kind of, very basic place, but some people find it difficult to live. People have moved on, so then it's kind of, it's built, but things have not been well maintained. There's a very beautiful sala, but so different things attract people to it. But it's kind of been foundering over the last 15, 20 years. And I heard about it by a friend, monk of mine, Taniko, who used to live here at Bodhinyana Monastery for many years. And he really liked it and asked me to have a, take a look at it. So I went with the intention of practicing, but also hopefully to also revitalize the place as a monastery. So I've been there for 2 years, and just doing some helping with doing some of the repair work, and providing some teaching, just allowing people to come and practice. So it's a small place in terms of the community. It's another monk here and a few other lay practitioners for the coming rains. But nice things about being there is that it is most of the structures, infrastructure, set up already, and it's relatively it's near Sydney, so it's providing a place for people to come and practice. And there's not many kind of a Theravada meditation place in Sydney. So allowing a place where people come and practice, I think hopefully over the years will take shape and come to something. So that's a brief introduction to Wat Buddha Dhamma for those who haven't heard it. Okay, dear Ajahn, is it not uncommon for some monks not to attain jhana state to meditation? What was the Buddha's position on this? Thank you. Yes. It's not only not uncommon, it's quite rare actually, to be frank, for monks to attain jhana. But then it's difficult to know, because monks are not allowed by their rules of discipline to tell lay people what their attainments are. Right? So they're not supposed to say whether they have jhanas or not. But also I think it's encouraged that, it kind of wants meditation attainment. It's something, a personal thing, and it's not another thing to build a sense of self around, right? We're in the practice of letting go, so we're not even kind of encouraged to talk to other people, to other monks regarding that. It's mainly something between you and your teacher, really. Yeah. And, why is it difficult to attain jhana states in meditation? I think, well, it's possible. Certainly Ajahn Brahm encourages and teaches a lot about it. But I think that the world we live in is just, the reality is that we live in a very fast-paced, complicated world. So our mind is moving very quickly. And it's difficult to quieten it when it comes time to sit down. And also we live in a world where it stimulates lots of craving, lots of wanting, lots of doing, managing, from a sense of self, because we're encouraged to get in there and do things. And meditation is actually going in the opposite direction. It's about letting go, making peace, allowing things to be, and to fade away on its own. And that's very difficult. I was going to talk something about this, so I would take the opportunity to expand on it. And basically, what is meditation? Right? Meditation is the art of being. We're called human being, but it's actually a misnomer. We're human doing. Very few of us learn how to be. We're always taught, conditioned from early on to do things, to manage things, to plan, to try to control. So when it comes to meditation, it's the same. We haven't quite learned. And there are many ways, to approach meditation. A good simile for the mind is that, the mind is like the very popular simile in Buddhism, is the mind is like the surface of a lake with lots of waves on it. And the waves are, you know, thinking, wanting, planning, talking to ourselves, different things that move the mind. We live in a busy life, we have responsibilities, so we have to do a certain amount of planning and controlling. Those are the waves on the lake. And to quieten that down, what most of us wants to do is to kind of, you know, put our hand in it, or try to smooth it out somehow, to pat it down the waves. And we stick our hand into it and try to do that. It makes more waves. Right? And meditation is just about just to allow the waves, the thinking, planning, doing, to fade away slowly, just to watch it. By watching with awareness, with clarity, but also with acceptance, then the mind will start to become more still. Right? The goal of meditation is stillness. So we heard, you know, Ajahn Brahm talk about, you know, many, many times here. The goal is stillness. The way to stillness, you don't get to stillness by doing more things. So the goal is stillness, but the way must also be still. A non-doing. The way to kind of associate with meditation is like surrendering. When you surrender, you don't do. You give up. You give up to whatever is happening right now in your body and your mind. So just to look inside, be aware of whatever is happening, and then to accept it, and then that fades away. And that's how you get to stillness, by becoming still first. By becoming still in the present moment, building up moment by moment, and then stillness happens. So just to keep in mind that, yeah, it's not more doing, we're not, and you know, also meditation is kind of allowing us to kind of slow down first, become still, and learn about experience, the nature of experience. It's not to achieve some ultimate state of bliss, although that might happen, but just understand our mind, you know, like at the end of meditation, what happened, where were you? Just know, okay, this is a distracted mind, it feels like this. The mind becomes more still, it feels like this. That way, we can always learn from meditation. We're not striving for an experience that we can tell a friend about it. Not getting to jhana so you can tell all your friends what wonderful bliss you had in the last 10 days. We have to let all those things go. If there's a you meditating, it becomes rather difficult. It becomes hard work. But when you begin to get out of the way, and just to watch, allow the desire, the craving, the planning, the wanting, all that to fade away. Then the mind becomes still. Not your mind, but just a mind. Okay, it's a good thing to keep in mind. What was the Buddha's position on this jhanas? Obviously, he thinks it's very important to become enlightened. Is you have to become still enough to go through the jhanas, and then obviously to reflect on experience itself. To reflect, you know, to develop your wisdom, but wisdom that comes from stillness, not wisdom that comes from more thinking or more studying or memorizing. But the wisdom that comes from a still mind is very powerful, something that can cut through our craving. Questions or comments? Clarifications? Yes?
In terms of like the past night, having done that for some time, and you know the focus on the breath is very strong, I'm finding it a bit difficult here, in as much as trying to stay present. So, in terms of Buddha, is it right that Buddha's teaching was mainly
the past one? Ajahn Brahm would say different. The Buddha's teaching, he taught both. he taught, you know, calm and insight, which is samatha and vipassana. Samatha is calming, and then after that, vipassana. But vipassana will arise naturally after a calm mind. Yeah. And but you don't necessarily have to, you know, there's many methods to a peaceful mind, to a still mind. Usually, obviously, the breath, mindfulness of the breathing is popular because it's simple, something that most of us can do. And the breath is a good object because it also becomes more subtle. The more still your mind becomes, you know, the breath starts to fade away. But it is more of a natural process as well. Just this process of watching the breath and becomes more, you know, calm or more subtle. And it fades away and different things happen. And you're suddenly having problem watching the breath.
Well, I'm not watching it so much. I'm trying not to do anything, so I find I'm not watching it.
Yes, but first, for the mind to become completely still, it needs something to anchor it first. Something to keep in the present moment. And like this morning, I was talking about the body sweeping, because sometimes the breath can be very subtle. And to focus right from the beginning on the breath, some people find it that, you know, it's not so easy to do it for long periods of time. So I think once we start off with this, just to be aware of the body, to calm that down. And then once the mind starts to stay in the present moment, be more comfortable with it, and then the breath usually comes up naturally. Another one. Can you please explain the practice of walking meditation? Okay, tomorrow, 10 o'clock. When meditating, and I'm sometimes not able to be in the present moment because of thoughts, do I have to continuously try to be present, then only follow my breath? What if it takes a long time? Sometimes it feels like a struggle, and then sometimes the breath comes automatically. I'm just confused about present moment and when to pay attention to breath. The process... Okay. That must be it. Okay, I'm just confused about the present moment, when to pay attention to the breath, and the whole process, I suppose. Yes, when anything, look, you know, have a feel, what works for your mind. Sometimes if there's lots of thoughts and the mind doesn't seem to want to settle on the breath, then maybe just spend a few minutes watching the thoughts for a second to see, you know, where is it going and what things are kind of preoccupying you. Maybe you had an argument earlier, issues, some difficult issues, emotional issues that's coming up. Just kind of be with that. Just see, okay, yeah, why are these thoughts coming up, and where are you going? Just to be aware, to note it. Okay, and then once, like I said, with thoughts, you know, memories, emotions, sometimes they come up. Sometimes they can be unpleasant. And the natural reaction is just try to, you know, suppress them, repress them, and to move into the breath, and to forget about them. But I find that it's more effective if the mind seems it doesn't want to focus on the breath just right away, then just to be with the thoughts for a few minutes first. And then once that starts to calm down, then just gently redirect it onto the breath. Like I said, meditation is an art, it's not a science, because each and every of our mind is different. And it's not like a case where we can, you know, use willpower to get to peace. It's not a case where, you know, we can force the mind on the breath. You can't do that for short periods of time, but you'll find that you get more stressed, feel more tense, and the experience of meditation becomes unpleasant because you have to use so much force to do it. So with anything, just kind of nudge it. Your meditation practice is like, just treat your mind like a child. You want a child to be, to go to sleep, to become still. You have to sing it a lullaby, to gently, kind of stroke it, to kind of bribe it into stillness. And you kind of look at your mind, and you kind of say, shut up, go to sleep. It starts to cry, it starts to make more noise, right? So you have to kind of bribe, okay, I'm just going to, 5 minutes. So I'm going to watch the rest of my 5 minutes and see what happens. And then just to nudge and to gently push it along, but not to kind of use too strong will. And to know when to kind of be more forceful, and when to just to kind of allow it to be to do what it wants first, and just to watch the thoughts, to see where it goes. And it's a fine balance. Sometimes the mind becomes still very quickly, and sometimes it doesn't. And just to be attentive, be aware, and not have any kind of expectations, in terms of where your meditation should be, how still the mind is. But the whole journey, purpose, is just to watch the mind, to learn from it. And once we learn more about mind, we will find ways to quiet it down naturally. And most of it, like I said, is kind of the art of about letting go, complete acceptance. Just allowing things to be. I know we want to be still, and sometimes we want to get in there and just kind of squeeze it and keep it still. But that's the path to more distraction, to more confusion. So the kind of indirect way, by making peace, by surrendering to it, become still. And once we understand that, we get a better feel for it, then the mind can become very quiet very quickly. As long as we surrender to it, surrender to the present moment. So a lot of times, through meditation, like I said, a lot of times when we sit, you have no expectation, your mind could be you had a very busy day, or you just had an argument with somebody, or feeling very tired, but you said, okay, it's meditation time, so I'll just sit anyway for 10 minutes and see what happens. With no expectation, probably the opposite, saying, okay, it's very busy, whatever, but I'm just going to sit and try to process the thing. And the mind becomes very quiet. It opens up. And that's the thing. Once we meditate more, you understand that our job is just to cultivate this watcher, unmoving watcher. And then the mind opens up on its own. And just have this patience, perseverance, just to be there. And things happen naturally. So we're here to set the conditions where the mind becomes still. We're not here to make it still. And that condition is, like I said, different people approach it by letting go, by accepting, by being at peace, and just being there. Okay. Is there any questions or comments? When you have pain during meditation, is it better to focus on the pain and try to breathe it out, or do you just ignore it? Pain is something that will come up, definitely for most of us during meditation, from time to time. Sometimes it's more distracting, other times it's not so distracting. But it's something we all have to kind of work through. And my advice is that, depending where you are in your meditation practice, if you're a relative beginner, say you've only been meditating for the last 5 years or 10 years, then it's not necessary to endure the pain. Notice the pain, and it distracts you, from your meditation object, let's say a pain in the knee or the back, then just you mindfully change your posture, especially in the beginning. Because, like I was saying early in the day, that unless the body is comfortable, the mind will not settle down. And there is no one right posture. You don't have to be on the floor when you meditate. Especially as beginners, I encourage people to sit in chairs to be as comfortable as you can. There's no extra samadhi points for sitting on the floor or sitting in full lotus. It's just the posture that was popular in India because people sit on the ground. So it's the most stable. Full lotus is most stable. You're not using cushions and you're just sitting on the ground. But now we have cushions and we have chairs and we have stools. It's completely optional for the full lotus. And whatever is stable, keep the body still, allows you to keep your body still, fairly erect. And just the main is the mind, to be awake, aware, and alert. Okay? And also to have the least amount of pain. Because if you have pain a lot in your meditation, and you sit with it, you don't change the posture, then the body, and the kind of, the thing that leaves an impression is that meditation is painful. It's not fun. And then the mind is not going to want to meditate, and it's not going to become still. Right? So when you're just starting out meditating, first few years, be as gentle as you can with the body. And then over time, as the body becomes more relaxed, and settles into the meditation, pain will go away naturally. You can sit longer without having to force it. And then once your mind becomes more still, you have more confidence, then you can use that mindfulness to investigate the pain. See where exactly, when your knee hurts, where exactly is it? Is it in the front of the knee, the bottom, the top? Is it deep inside the joint? Is it on the surface? And just to try to investigate instead of seeing as your pain, but seeing this is just feelings arising. And what exactly is it? And different things can happen. Sometimes the pain is not so solid. Sometimes just see what this vibrational pain, is it a sharp pain? And as your mindfulness increases, you find you can see deeply into the pain that it's not something so solid, it does move around. And at times, it can completely disappear just by looking with it, just like being with it. And you understand that, pain, like anything, it has its causes and condition. And as long as we don't attach to it, grasp onto it, try to push it away, it comes and goes. But that's something that we can only realize, work with. Once we have a fair stability of the mind first, once the mind begins to settle down. But initially, just trying to change your posture slowly, mindfully, and then refocus on the breath or your body or metta meditation, whatever it is. Yeah? Dear sir, my name is Jaswan Koo. I would like to ask, is there such a thing as silence chanting? Please advise. I think sometimes people can do a mantra, silently to themselves. You can repeat the word Buddha. Buddha, Buddha means the awakened one, the compassionate one. It's just to steer your mind towards wholesome states. Or you can just say to yourself, peace, 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 silently. Just to ground awareness in the present moment. So is that what you mean by silent chanting? Whoever asked the questions? Yeah, so it's a way, you know, like sometimes repeating the mantra is a way to ground the awareness. Yeah? Okay. Yes, you can do that. Yeah. Just if you're feeling a bit, you know, sleepy, or is another way to kind of bring awareness to the present moment, and you find the mind is drifting, then it's good to focus the mind by doing a chant, silent to yourself. Yeah, sure, no problem. Any more questions or comments? No, I think we do a lot of sitting and walking over the next few days. Then I think naturally some people find it's more useful to do some qigong or to do some stretching, and that's fine. Yeah. In the earlier days, I did some yoga, but over time, I find that the body becomes more relaxed. These kind of things not necessary. But people have different kind of physical requirements. So as long as you do the stretching in your room or something, or not disturbing other people, you do it outside, it's not a problem. Sure. Any more questions or comments? Yeah.
Sitting in a chair, is it necessary to have the spine away from the back of the chair, or is it okay to keep the body comfortable and rest a little bit?
I think generally it's okay to lean back against the chair, as long as the back is fairly straight. Because you find you lean back for a long time, that will also become uncomfortable. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, certainly feel free to lean back if it's more kind of relaxing. As long as have awareness, this clarity in the mind. Yeah. But like I said, this body of ours, it constantly wants attention. So even in a chair, you'll find that even after a while, an hour or two, it still becomes, you know, painful, whatever, different aches comes up. And but just to work with that, initially in the beginning, change posture, and do some walking meditation, and tomorrow I'll give a demonstration, a guided walking meditation. That way, to balance out, to complement a meditation practice. If you sit a lot and not used to it, it can be uncomfortable. And then, you know, like I said, it can lead to some aversion to meditation because you're sitting there all the time and there's aches in the knees and the back. So walking has a lot of benefits. Obviously good for your digestion, brings up, you know, some energy in the body. Feeling sleepy in the morning, you know, walk around outside, sort of brings, you know, some, you know, the clarity in the mind as well. Yeah. And the Buddha, you know, recommended, and also the Thai meditation masters, the Kruba Ajahn, did a lot of walking meditation. But like anything, walking meditation is not as refined, it's not as peaceful as sitting meditation right away. Myself anyway, I find I have to do a few hours of walking meditation for the mind just to kind of become more still. But the advantage of walking meditation is that once you have that, the mind becomes peaceful, then you can keep that peacefulness longer as you walk throughout, you know, as you do, you know, as you walk around, as you do things. Because whereas sitting can be very peaceful, but you're closing your eyes and you're sitting still. And as soon as you get up and open your eyes, you know, all the mindfulness just goes out the window because you're not still anymore. You're looking at things and you start to proliferate. But once you stabilize the mind through walking, it becomes clear and bright. Then as you walk around, you can be more aware. Just, you know, what it feels in your body to be walking around, your posture, the things you're looking at, And you have this nice, you know, deep peace all throughout the day. Once, you know, you learn to settle the mind using walking meditation. Yeah, so that's the benefit of walking meditation. A lot of people kind of experiment. Because a lot of times we think meditation is just sitting here with our eyes closed and be as still as possible. But it's all in the training about, you know, mindfulness. Having the clarity to know what's happening, what we're doing, thinking, feeling, each and every moment. And just be aware of that. Okay? Yes?
Is there a fine line between tension that arises versus like tension you might be creating?
Yes. Definitely, for the people who didn't hear that. Is there a fine line between tension that you're creating or tension that's arising from the body? I think with meditation, remember, it's true. The purpose we meditate is to become more relaxed. That's at least the initial goal of meditation. And, you know, to become relaxed and to refresh our mind and to slow the mind down. So at the end, each and every meditation, just you can review that. How does it feel? Am I more relaxed? Am I more tense? And if we do it, meditation correctly, it should lead towards, you know, being more relaxed and less tension in the body. And if you feel, for some reason, after a meditation, you feel more tense, then said, okay, maybe I'm putting too much effort, I'm controlling too much, I'm forcing the mind too much. So always reflect on that to see. Because the last time we do it, and because of our habitual tendencies, kind of controlling and focusing and kind of willing our way to peace, we don't notice that we're actually forcing the mind and the breath a lot. That we're getting, you know, tense around the jaw areas, or your shoulders, and you start to kind of grit your teeth or something. And you realize, okay, I'm trying too hard. And I just kind of relax. Remind yourself, you know, peace, stillness, you know, just gentleness. And that's why the preliminary practice of kind of being kind, being gentle, living peace and harmony is not some kind of happy clappy thing that Buddhism, you know, teaches you just to for the fun of it. It's an important practice for meditation. If you live in peace and harmony with gentleness and kindness in your everyday life, there's the same kind of momentum of the mind, accepting and not doing, that you can take into your meditation. So the people that get good meditation are the nice one, the kind one, the generous one, the peaceful one. The strong-willed one, the big egos, the achievers, the overachievers, and the managers. Usually, it's very difficult to get peaceful meditation because we bring the same momentum. You're controlling, willing, fighting your way through life, you'll be doing the same thing with your meditation. And it's slightly difficult. So, with meditation, just to notice, you know, whether it might be more tense or relaxed into it. The thing is to ease your way into meditation. You know, first few days, just to really try to slow down, be in this kind of beautiful centers. You know, relax your body, take lots of, you know, rest. You feel that if you've had a long week, just rest your body first. Allow the mind to naturally become more still, just by being here. You don't have to meditate, you know, whatever. Some people set very high goals when you go to meditation retreat. You know, okay, this is my 9-day, I'm going to do 10 hours a day. Just get up here at 5 o'clock, first one in, last one out, get my money's worth. And it's not about that. It's about just, you know, kind of a gentle process of easing your way into it. Just slowing down gently, you know, going around, enjoying the beautiful quiet surroundings first. Nice quiet place. Enjoying the fact that you've actually, you know, had this great karma to be in this quiet place, be with very, you know, quiet people who are not distracting you, not trying to talk to you, trying to sell you anything, trying to convert you, but just be in a quiet place. And then the mind will become still. naturally. And if it doesn't become still, at least you find out something about yourself, about what things preoccupy you, what things are on your mind all the time. Because a lot of time we're just too, it moves very quickly in the mind about, you know, because we have to, we have jobs and family responsibilities. The mind has to do a certain amount of work, planning, reviewing, thinking. And different things stays, you know, underneath that. Could be childhood dramas, emotional things that we don't like. And sometimes sitting quietly, these things come up, but doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes unpleasant memories can come up or things. But it's the way to purify the mind. It's just by watching it, allowing to be in your consciousness, embracing it, then it naturally fades away. But we start to repress it, to suppress it. It stays there, and it doesn't get dealt with. So sometimes people think, yeah, meditation is always, you know, a blissful and a wonderful experience. Not necessarily, but it doesn't mean it's bad either. When you have these difficult, you know, things coming up, it means it's there already, and it's good just to allow the thing up and to purify the mind from these kind of negative emotional states. Questions or comments? No, just to, like I said, there's a lot of questions regarding meditation. That was obviously the topic of tonight's talk. That meditation is about stillness. Like I said, yeah. Stillness is a goal, but stillness also has to be the way into stillness. So just reflect on that, just use what skills that you have to allow the mind to become still. Like I said, I find personally surrendering is the thing that works best for me. When you surrender, your choice is taken away from you. You have to do what the other people tell you. When you surrender to the enemy, you know, they're in charge. You're not in charge. You're just there to do, to be. And it takes away the sense of self. A lot of times that is the thing that gets involved, that stirs up the mind. It's the agendas that we have. Meditation, we have this saying, the walls of wanting. When you want something, you plan something. You want something like you want the first jhanas or you want nimittas. As soon as you want it, the walls come right up and it separates you from stillness. So just reflect on that. I'm sitting here, nothing wanting, nowhere to go. Something we can always, you know, like a mantra you can say to yourself. Nothing wanting, nowhere to go. Nothing to do, nowhere to go, just to be here. Things like that will allow the mind to become still. And that too. And also, patience is always the fastest way. Patience to allow things to take its course. A lot of time for most of us, we always want to, yeah, okay, I waited 5 minutes, okay, now I'm going to become still. Watching my breath for 15 minutes. No nimitta still. What? I have to talk to Ajahn Brahm about this. Yes, the nimittas, the jhanas, the nirvanas, everything is there. We just have to become more still to discover it. Yeah. Christians have a saying, be still and know that I'm God. Right? You have to be still first. And things happen naturally, things open up. And for the mind, it can be very quickly. So have faith as well. That is, and it's a well-dry and trodden path. And there's many thousands and millions of meditators over the last thousands of years. And they've gone this path, many great teachers who live, you know, who kind of leave behind very clear instructions. All we have to do is kind of have patience, have confidence, and walk that path, and it happens naturally. And ultimately meditation, you know, can bring great bliss, but also brings this insight into our own life. Bring insight to, you know, what is true happiness, and what is just temporary happiness, and what is suffering. And once those insights come up, then we can liberate ourselves. So yeah, like the Buddha said, he taught samatha and also vipassana, which is insight meditation. But it's always the emphasis. It's always the insight that comes from samatha, from the still mind. It's something much more reliable, much more profound and deep than anything our thinking mind, conceptualizing mind can arrive at. And also, from your own personal experience, you can see that as well. When you think about something, get obsessed, more confusion, mind just go round and round and round, there's no solution. But you kind of, you know, forget about it, take a walk, you know, not think about it for a few days, then the solution comes. Right. And that has to do with this kind of, you know, allowing the mind to be more still and not to kind of force it into a solution. So through stillness comes clarity. So I leave that for your reflections for tonight. Final questions or comments? Very good. So you can continue sitting, or you can rest, and see you tomorrow.